It's great to see you at this, the final session of the conference. So thank you for hanging on until the end, and hopefully with a combination of kittens and research findings, we'll make you feel it was worthwhile. So we're presenting today some research that Tony and I have done on student-led Facebook groups and the type of learning that takes place in those groups. So, the research actually stemmed from two different foci. Firstly, Tony and I had already for 2 or 3 years been researching self-educating online forum-based and Facebook group-based informal learning communities across the Commonwealth. These were communities of parents with children with autism who were supporting each other across the Commonwealth through forums and through Facebook. So we had done that for a few years. And our own background is as academics in the Open University. We both in different faculties, and we manage tutors in our respective faculties in addition to being researchers. And in that role, we had both come to realise the phenomenon that the university provided forums, the official learning spaces, were becoming increasingly empty. And I can see a few nods around at the room. I don't think this is a phenomenon unique to the OU at all. So, yeah, and only a few students taking part, and that affects the quality of the learning experience, and so then a few more students will drop out. So where are they going? Okay, well, you've probably given the game away already, haven't we? You'll probably guessed that where they're going is to Facebook. There's been a mass exodus of formal students and paid for institutions going into informal learning spaces led by students. So this isn't spaces that are set up by universities. It's not top down. This is where students get together in Facebook to discuss their studies. So it's not for social purposes, or there's a little element of that, but to discuss their OU studies. Now, this exodus to Facebook raises a number of challenges for online tutors who are firstly concerned about how to best manage the learning experience. You've taken students, the students have gone out of their realm where they manage the learning experience to some other space. There are concerns from tutors and institutions about educational standards. Is there going to be lots of misinformation going on? There'll be nobody moderating it. Is there going to be plagiarism, inaccuracies, bad behaviour, and so on? So quite a lot of concerns about that on the basis of this exodus. So we were really interested in the context of both our research and our day jobs to find out, well, let's see what's going on. Now, the Open University has, there are many, many, I think it's thousands, isn't it, of groups in Facebook related to OU, hundreds related to OU study. But we took a snapshot of a subset of these groups. We looked at 10 Facebook groups related to OU study. They covered 4 educational disciplines, law, education, science, and social science. We didn't cover our own direct disciplines because we thought there may be a conflict of interest there. So we have 4 disciplines. There are 3 undergraduate levels, so these are undergraduate students. We wanted to get a broad spread of educational levels and covering 2,600 members. And we evaluated each group for an identified month, so it is a snapshot of a particular month. And our question, our research question, are the groups educational, facilitating learning, and what practices are taking place? And the analysis comprised 2 facets. Firstly, there was a quantitative analysis of what's going on in the group. So just numbers of postings, frequency of particular types of postings in the group. But we also did a qualitative analysis of the sort of the content of the posts. And we used here Galley's Community Indicators Framework, which is a way of measuring the strength of an online community. And it works also for offline communities. But Galley proposes that these four indicators, and if you can't see them, read them out there. So there's identity, which is group self-awareness and shared language and a sense of community. Participation, whether the group participation is sustained over time and a core group of participants are committed to that. Cohesion, that includes things like support and tolerance within the group and turn-taking and response, so it's a question and answer. And humour and playfulness as well. That's an important part of cohesion. And finally, the creative capability element, which Galley says is sort of like the pinnacle of group formation. If a group has managed to get around the creative capability, they're pretty much self-educating and they're a really strong group. And that's things like igniting a sense of purpose, so people are all working together on something. And the possibility for multiple points of view to be expressed and contradicted and challenged without it breaking down the structure of the group and without it generating to dissent. And they're also the creation of knowledge. So creation of knowledge links and patterns. If that's possible, then the group has got to that stage in its formation. So we use that as part of our analysis. Now Tony is going to talk to you a bit about what we found out.
We quickly realised there were three entirely different sorts of groups, and the language is from Open University, so it may not entirely match campus-based universities. The first one we found were umbrella groups. So these are kind of discipline-wide groups. There might be one on psychology in total, for example. And students appear to join these to discuss study routes and whole career patterns kind of thing. Then there'll be individual module groups. These are students who've signed up and are participating in a named module. In the Open University, that's for 9 months at a time. And it's quite common for students to be in a couple of groups simultaneously. So you might be in this one for the whole of your degree, but this one only for 1 year. Then you move on to the next module or the next module. So there's umbrella groups, module groups, and then what we call student life groups. This is where we found the pictures of the kittens. And some very functional groups. So there are regional groups, because the OU is a nationwide university. Students get together locally. Surprise, surprise, they do. Textbook exchange, where students pass on books from the previous year, often selling them very cheaply. Again, I think that happens on campus universities, that kind of stuff. And I was really pleased to see a really strong disabled students group in there. So, well, there's a number of them, but ensuring they get the best out of the university. So they're kind of advocating for one another. So all those kind of student life groups. So we asked the question, are they educational and facilitating learning? The groups vary greatly the degree to which they appear educational. And to enable us to compare them, we gave them a score ranging from 10% to 100%. And on the whole, the number went up the further into the degree they went. Not surprising, but it was a really clear trend. So this is from, I think, a level 3 group. So it's module serious stuff going on in this. They are using the space for genuine educational purposes, and we could produce loads of slides like that, snapshots of what's going on in there. And we also found that two of the groups showed an extended educational function. because they were discussing career pathways. So this is stuff that careers people would do in the old world, but they're saying, right, if I do this combination of modules and pick these topics, how will these work with my career? And they're kind of sharing one another's insight into the career market, the jobs market. Really high-level, valuable stuff they were doing. So yes, definitely educational. The corollary to that is that the ones, particularly first-year groups, they provide a very different service, and it's emotional support, mostly. So we think the groups are really important, but they are all different, and they have different blends of hard stuff, emotional support, and intellectual stuff. And they also vary over time. So they don't start at the same place where they finish, unsurprisingly. So just to unpick that a bit, this is really important. There's a lot of peer-provided guidance, particularly in the first-year groups, about academic practice and study skills. So people are helping one another out a great deal, really reciprocal relationships going on. And just as a side to that, the participation rates are phenomenal, the groups that we looked at. So if you, how many people use Moodle VLE or anything like that? Half the group do that. Okay, right. I think people are generally quite pleased if 10% of the group take part. And we saw 100% and more. So there are more students taking part in the groups than there were students on the course. And we learned what happened is that people were thinking of doing that course next year or joining groups to see how it is. And they're taking part. Fascinating dynamic. And then you've got students from the previous year also taking part, saying, oh, this is what happened last year, and then suggesting pathways. And very responsive in a way. Peer-provided guidance, all helping one another. Extensive emotional support. We have seen some amazing sequences of people just about to drop out. Say, can't do this, confidence at a real low. And the way the group kind of pile in and support them, keep them going, it brings tears to your eyes to watch it. It really does. And then, obviously, the discussion module content, as we saw before. But as the groups move up through the levels of university, you get more content. They've kind of sorted out the emotional load of studying. If you get to third year of university, you've worked out how to be a student by and large. So in general, we think they complement formal tuition. We think they have the capacity to improve retention. If there are any figures on that, we've only taken one snapshot. But the practice we saw, you would generally say that would help student retention. Another point is that although we looked at thousands of posts, didn't see any bad practice at all. I've since taken this up with moderators, so I now belong to a group of moderators of Facebook groups, and this is quite normal. The things that people said about Facebook groups, they, it's all full of plagiarism of people bad-mouthing tutors, is very, very small, and it tends to take place, we think, in secret groups. The big bulk groups, these ones, we haven't seen any of it.
And we should say that the groups that we analysed here were all public groups, so they're all open groups. And we discussed it in our ethics session a little bit earlier, that there's a sense that the openness is, in a way, a guard against that bad behaviour, because it is open to the world.
The other dimension to it, I think, is about education inclusion. That because the groups help one another, and they seem to be very happy to support people who are struggling, we think it makes it easier for people who may be struggling to fit into higher education. They do seem to be able to have that ability to help one another out. And if you think about like MOOC world, which seems to be really foregrounding and benefiting well-educated people who
elitist.
Successful.
Oh, yeah,
yeah.
It's elitist.
This seems to be what's exactly the opposite. It seems to work to the benefit of marginalised minorities.
Well, just people who traditionally may be excluded.
Yeah.
From learning.
So.
Okay, so we then considered on the basis of these findings, which, as Tony has said, are bounded. They're, you know, it's just a small subset of the groups that are out there. You know, what are the implications of this? And we're particularly interested in the implications for institutions, because thus far, across a lot of institutions, there's a lot of hostility towards Facebook. The feeling that they're undermining formal tuition, there's bad practices going on in there, that there's a distrust of what's going on, undervaluing. So, you know, a lot of hostility. At best, we've seen institutions' response is, well, if they are working so well, what we want to do is come in there and take over and just sort things out a bit and bring them into our fold. Our argument is that these groups are working so well exactly because they're not like that, because they are student-led. It's not a top-down form of support. It's bottom-up, and as such, it's needs-led. So the students are discussing things in there that they need. They're working with each other to meet each other's needs, be they emotional or sort of cognitive, to do with the content of their modules. So sort of thinking this through, we saw a sort of a parallel, really, with student societies, in that's group of like-minded students who get together. And often, I know that the university gives, I think, £100 per society to help them set up and do admin and things. So we think that the institutions really need to recognise the value of the groups, and Tony's already mentioned the value in terms of retention, which is a huge thing in universities. Now, if these groups are helping students feel supported, learn to become students, that's benefiting the university, absolutely. So it's worth not only acknowledging the value of these groups, but supporting them in some way. It could be through training moderators. It's not through stepping in there and taking over. Absolutely not. So, obviously, said already, this is a small snapshot. For us to really get more of a sense of how groups are working like this, we need more people to be looking at groups in their field, different levels, different areas, to build a bigger picture of exactly how Facebook groups are working. In part, to build a body of evidence that helps to sort of counter the institutional imperative to control things. So, it'd be great if you've got any questions, any suggestions, any sort of shared experiences from your own contexts. Super. Thank you for listening.